Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Some decisions define a president and a presidency. For Barack Obama this week, it's health care at home and abroad, Afghanistan. President Obama faces a decision on whether to commit more troops to Afghanistan after already ordering in 21,000 more this spring. His top general there has laid the groundwork for another big request. His administration is divided. The American people, too. Vietnam and Iraq and Al-Qaeda haunt the debate. Meanwhile, across Afghanistan, the Taliban is back 8 years after 9/11. This hour on Point, Fateful Choices in Afghanistan. You can join the conversation. What's your advice to President Obama? Go deep, go light, head home. What should the U.S. do in Afghanistan? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear voices for and against buildup this hour, and from Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, who says it's time to find the road home. Joining us first from Kabul, Afghanistan, is Carlotta Gall, reporter for The New York Times. She's been posted there since the American invasion in 2001. She has seen the whole sweep of this story. Carlotta, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you.
I'm looking at headlines just this morning. One says Hamid Karzai, the incumbent, has 54% of the vote and probably won't need any kind of secondary vote there, as many have thought there might be. At the same time, the UN-backed commission is ordering a recount of ballots and saying it found convincing evidence of fraud. Is there a resolution here or just more stalemate, Carlotta?
Well, I think there's still weeks more of investigation and tallying of the votes. This is a preliminary result. It's not the end, and that's what we're being told, but it still could change, and we don't know how many votes are going to be invalidated, but maybe some of the ones that bring him over the 50% mark, we just don't know. So we're being told, though, that it's significant. Even the European Union has come out saying there's hundreds of thousands of fraudulent votes that have been accepted at the Tali Center. So I think it's really not over yet, and it might be quite a while before we actually have final certified results.
Karzai's people saying they have the votes. His main challenger, Abdullah, entangled in that dispute, said over the weekend that he's worried about the legitimacy of the government and the future of the country.
My concern is that if we cannot save this process, if the future government of Afghanistan is based on fraud, on top of every other problem that we have, there will be illegitimate rule.
Carlotta Gall, do you see the makings here for a peaceful resolution to this electoral quagmire? Oh, sounds like we lost Carlotta Gall. We'll try and we'll see if we can get back to Kabul. But in the meantime, with me right now, Stephen Walt. He is a professor of international relations at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, has emerged as a significant voice of skepticism about build-up and heavy presence in Afghanistan. Stephen, thanks very much for being here.
Nice to be here.
And from Lewis, Delaware, we're joined by Lawrence Korb, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He was Assistant Secretary of Defense under President Reagan, was an informal advisor to the Obama campaign, continues to advise members of Congress on foreign policy matters. He is supporting an increase in U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan. Larry Korb, welcome back to you as well.
Good to be back again.
Larry, I'll come first to you. 68,000 U.S. troops will be there by year's end, 100,000 plus with NATO troops. You know that you've got some very vocal critics now saying if that's not enough, some thousands more won't do it. Why are you arguing for a troop build-up, Larry Korb?
Well, I think you've got to get the security situation under control before you can do anything. And we're not talking about, you know, doubling the number. We're talking maybe about, 10 to 20,000 at the most more Americans. And I think if you do that, that will send a signal to the people in the region that we're serious about it. We're not going to leave as we have in the past. And if you can get the security situation under control, the Afghan warlords always want to go with a winner. I think once you do that, it can begin to get the situation where you can stabilize Afghanistan.
Stephen Walt, come in heavy, show that you're a winner. You can bring the warlords in line, and we sail on home.
I think that's unfortunately too optimistic. The amount of forces that anyone is talking about right now is far fewer than the numbers that have been needed for successful peacekeeping operations or successful counterinsurgency operations in the past. And we've been there now for 8 years and with a heightened level of effort in recent years and months, and still haven't made much progress. The fundamental problem here is we have to do a cost-benefit analysis and ask, is the danger to the United States sufficient? Great to take on a multi-year, multi-billion-dollar commitment. And that's what we're talking about here. Larry, by the way, who wrote a very interesting report last summer on this, made it very clear that if we intend to fix Afghanistan, we are going to be there for a decade or more. And there's no guarantee we'll even succeed at that point.
Lawrence Korb, is that right? A decade or more from now, that is 18 years after 9/11?
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out, you know, Steve is correct that we've been here, you know, for 8 years, but we really haven't. I mean, this has been under-resourced. Nobody paid attention to it. And really, we're just almost starting anew now. Doesn't mean you have to keep the same number of troops there, but I think it's important for the president to make clear to the American people that, you know, if he follows the advice of General McChrystal and given his own, you know, sending 21,000 troops and saying it's a war of necessity, it's going to be a long haul. The idea that somehow you're going to get, you know, out, you know, in a couple of months, I think is naive. And if you're not willing to do that, I think then you ought to, you know, follow Steve's advice.
A long haul, a decade more, that would be nearly a generation after 9/11. And the reason you would find that all that blood and treasure and time necessary, Lawrence Korb, is, in a nutshell, how do you justify it?
Well, I think you want to ensure that Afghanistan doesn't destabilize the region, doesn't become a home for, you know, terrorists with a global reach again, because what's happened actually since 9/11, now you have the whole question of Pakistan there, and if you send a signal that you're not serious, I think the Pakistanis will try and go with a winner as well. And then, of course, you do risk, I think, much greater security threat to the United States.
We have Carlotta Gall with us from Kabul, Afghanistan, again with the New York Times. Carlotta, I'm glad we got you back. You know, the debate is very hot and heavy in the States now, and American public opinion quite divided on what ought to be done with Afghanistan. What about in the country itself? Do you find a widespread awareness that the United States is now debating whether to come in heavy or really head home, Carlotta? Are Afghan leaders weighing that possibility? How do they look at Obama's decision?
I think the more educated ones who are hooked up with the internet will be aware, but the vast majority, of course, live in villages. They hear the radio, but for them, I think so far they've seen an influx of troops this year, but they've also heard President Obama talking about talking to the Taliban and protecting the people, so more considerate words than they felt they've had previously. So I think there's not a very aware feeling of the debate yet in the States over whether there should be a withdrawal or should be increased, but certainly the Afghans are aware of change, and they're just waiting to see what's going to happen and what an Obama administration is really going to mean on the ground.
We've heard some rather grim assessments from U.S. commanders about the situation in Afghanistan, the spread of Taliban influence there, the sort of tight timetable, a year or 18 months to get this thing right. We've heard top generals say, do Afghans feel that their situation is improving, deteriorating? Do they look at it through a different prism than maybe the American media and American politicians, or not, Carlotta?
Actually, I think the Afghans are way ahead because they're living with it and they're living in it. Mm-hmm. And if you go to southern Afghanistan, there's enormous alarm and fear that the situation is out of control, and the reaction of the military has often been ineffective
or dangerous for Afghans because of the civilian casualties and so on. So I think the Afghans are very aware of how dire the situation is. And I think that was shown recently with the elections, how few people came out because they're living with of insecurity, and they didn't turn out because of fear of insecurity, but also rejection of this whole situation because they're so fed up that their lives are so difficult. So I think the Afghans are actually ahead of the American public because they're living in it.
What about NATO, in particular U.S. troops? What do you hear them saying, Kalata, when you get to interact with them, commanders, troops? Are they saying we've got to have more help out here, or and then we can do this, or this can't be done? What's the tone?
You get a lot of that because I think a lot of the soldiers on the ground believe in what they're doing, and so therefore they will give you the optimistic view of this is what we're doing and this is what we're trying to achieve. But you also will hear asides where they'll say, we can't do this, or we need more troops, or this is harder than we expected. These people are fighting more than we expected. So it's a mixture. A lot of them do believe in what is possible, and a lot of them are very impressed, I think, with General McChrystal and the new plan. There is a plan there. There is a way forward. But then it's tough, especially down in the south. So if you go out with the troops there, you are very, very aware of how difficult it is. IEDs, you know, these roadside bombs everywhere. And they're living with that every day, and they, you know, they're really confronting a very, very difficult enemy.
No question about it, and we see it in all the numbers and every report. Carlotta Gall with the New York Times in Kabul. Thank you very much for being with us, Carlotta.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Afghanistan and President Obama's big looming decision about whether to go deep, pull back, what is next here. Joined this hour by Stephen Walt, professor of international relations at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, a regular blogger for Foreign Policy magazine. He says, out, or at least let's get much lighter there and do it soon. Lawrence Korb is with us, senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He's advocating increasing U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan to perhaps 100,000. 68,000 will be there by the end of this year with the 21,000 that Barack Obama's put in. A lot of talk about this and ambivalence. You can hear it. Last week at a Pentagon press conference, here's Admiral Mike Mullen, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, with Defense Secretary Robert Gates, saying the U.S. needs to show progress somehow soon in Afghanistan.
I do believe we have to start to turn this thing around from a security standpoint over the next 12 to 18 months. I think the strategy's right. We know how to do this. We've got a combat-hardened force that is terrific in counterinsurgency. To listen to General McChrystal, he believes it's achievable, and I think we can succeed. That said, it's complex. It's tough. We're losing people, as everybody knows. And yet that's the mission that the president has given us in the military.
That's the mission. We know how to do it, but it's complex. It's tough. Defense Secretary Robert Gates has reportedly been quite ambivalent about putting in more troops, afraid that more troops themselves would create pushback. Here he is. He's on the record as having said that. Yeah, but last week with McChrystal, Stanley McChrystal, the general, laying out his new vision, well, he's coming around, maybe. Let's listen.
If they interact with the Afghans in a way that give confidence to the Afghans that we're their partners and their allies, then the risks that I have been concerned about the footprint becoming too big and the Afghans seeing us in some role other than partners, I think is mitigated. But, you know, I'm very open to the recommendations and certainly the perspective of General McChrystal.
Very open. It hardly sounds like a rousing embrace. Stephen Walt, we're told that there's a real debate inside this administration right up to Vice President Joe Biden about whether to go in heavier or not. How do you read from the outset in these comments and in what you see and hear? How do you read the outlines of this internal debate?
Well, I think that the fact that they're having a debate is a good thing. It also conveys that there are people in the administration who are aware of just how difficult this task is. If you go back and look at the original Obama administration's white paper that came out in February, I believe, it said that these were daunting tasks, and it then laid out a whole series of very difficult things, which I think underscores the fact that, we are attempting to do something here that is probably impossible and certainly very difficult. We're trying to essentially do social engineering on a country of 32 million people. It's divided into at least five principal tribes and lots of other subdivisions within that where we don't have much knowledge of that society. We don't have the language capacity. We don't know the history particularly well. And the idea that a bunch of Americans are going to come in there and reorganize their politics in some kind of compelling or effective way, I think, is the very definition of hubris. We've seen that already, right? We're dealing with a government that's deeply corrupt. We don't really know how to eradicate the corruption within that society. We devoted considerable effort to trying to pull off an election, which now looks like it was more fraudulent than legitimate and is not going to yield a legitimate government. And so Americans have to recognize that whatever justifications are being put in front of them, the task before us here is probably something we simply don't know how to do. And continuing to pour more resources into it, roughly $60 to $70 billion a year, for a country whose entire gross national product is a fifth of that. We spend five times more each year on the country than the country is worth, strikes me as misguided. My fear is that Obama essentially committed himself in the first few months of his administration, and now we'll find it impossible to do what he should do, which is namely rethink the whole matter and begin to turn and get us out.
But you know that the warning is if we get out, this region goes to hell in a handbasket, and we saw it may be a tiny GDP, it may be rocks and barren hillsides, but we saw the towers come down. That's still powerful imagery for the American people. Nobody wants a base out there from which that might happen again.
This is the main strategic argument, the so-called safe haven argument. And I think if you look carefully at it, it is not nearly as compelling as you think. First of all, it's not clear that the Taliban are actually going to win in Afghanistan, even if we're not there. The situation is very different than the 90s when they first took power. Even if they did win, it's not clear that they would give al-Qaeda free rein. And even if they gave al-Qaeda some free rein, it's not clear that that adds very much to al-Qaeda's capabilities. They can't operate openly in Afghanistan because we could still go after them if they did. They'd have to operate in a clandestine way. And you can plot conspiracies anywhere. You just need an apartment building or a hut or something. The idea that we are going to face a significantly more powerful and more dangerous al-Qaeda because they happen to have a haven in Afghanistan as opposed to wherever they're hiding out in Pakistan today, I think exaggerates how much. I don't want to say there's no threat there, but is that a danger that's worth, again, a 10-year commitment at $60 to $70 to $80 billion with no guarantee of success?
Larry Korb, I want to come to you on that and Stephen Walt to hear what you would do if not double down in Afghanistan. We have a lot of callers on the line as well. Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi. I mean, I've been there, done that, got the T-shirt, and I have to say this. It is going to be a long process, and I mean that in a total consist of wanting to stay there because of the fact that it's not done. Iraq wasn't done. We're pulling out of there. We're there to win the hearts and minds. That's all we want to do. We're not there to hurt anybody. We're only there to defend ourselves if we have to.
Joe, you were there how recently? In what service? And where were you deployed?
Marine Corps, Iraq, Fallujah, October to April, 07-08, and just now got back in March, Afghanistan. And just want to say that, well, we've lost a lot of trust there, definitely. And we need to build it back up with them. We left Afghanistan completely unguarded, basically helping them out. Can't turn it over to the Afghani forces there, like we did to Iraq. They weren't ready either in Iraq, but we're still sending mid teams over there to help them out and get them ready. You know, we're training them. We're still training people in Afghanistan. That's what we need to do: stay there and help them out, build their confidence in their own country, so they can take care of their own country.
Do you think it can ultimately happen, Joe? Do you think it's, you know, winnable, whatever that means to you?
I am very convinced. convinced it's winnable, and I will go over there as many times as I need to help out. I'm willing to do that on any case of any base.
We're going to have 68,000 U.S. troops there by the end of this year, 100,000 plus with NATO. Do you think another, 30,000 U.S. troops would make the difference?
I think so. I think that if we get the proper time to train them and get them to take care of their own country, it's definitely capable, because if we do it now, we probably won't have to do it again. You know, we get their forces confident enough in doing what they need to do to their own country and policing their own, basically, you know, taking care of each other for themselves. And we probably won't find any more problems. But we need to take our time. We need to do it right the first time. And we need to basically pass on knowledge like we do in the Marine Corps to the younger Marines, pass on the knowledge to them on how to take care of their own, how to police their own, but not do it in a discriminating manner to the fact that they will go in an inappropriate manner, as I should say, to take care of the country. They shouldn't have to use too much force, but still politically do it. But also, if they need to use force, they know how to, the proper way, and they know how to, you know, without hurting people and longevity of a sense.
Joe, we appreciate your service and your perspective there from Camp Lejeune and the Marine Corps. Thank you very much for calling. Lawrence Korb, Joe's served and says he's willing to serve again as many times as necessary. He says it's just about hearts and minds. Of course, that makes some people nervous, hearkening back to Vietnam to hear hearts and minds. We saw the country fail to win those there ultimately at great cost. You say 10 years? How many troops? Would 100,000 U.S. troops do it? Do you agree, Larry?
Well, I think you get close to 100,000 troops, then you can, as Admiral Mullen said, begin to see some progress in a year, year and a half, which means the security situation begins to get under control. But you don't have to keep 100,000 troops there for 10 years. I mean, we are finally training the Afghan security forces, and the Army particularly is much more effective than the the Iraqi army was, because it's not rent by sectarian divisions. And I think that's the key. My point is that I think it's important to convey to the American people that if, you know, President Obama wants to do this, it's not going to be quick and easy. You know, a year and a half can bring all the Marines and the soldiers home, but you can begin to draw it down. And Steve is right. It's going to be costly. I don't think it'll be as costly as the war in Iraq was, but it will be costly, and you have to weigh whether, in fact, you know, the potential for destabilizing the region is worth it. We do have NATO troops there, you know, much more foreign troops than we ever had in Iraq. And the Afghan people welcomed us at first, unlike, you know, the people in Iraq who never wanted us there and probably going to vote us out, you know, if they have a referendum here in January.
But Stephen Walt says we don't actually have to be there. Al-Qaeda can organize anywhere. They can organize in an apartment in Hamburg. How much difference does it make? I mean, what's the argument? You know, the counterargument that is rising all over the place is, let's use commandos, let's use drones, let's use airstrikes, but let's get the big heavy footprint out of there. Why not, Larry?
Well, again, I think that we've tried that in effect in the 90s when President Clinton, remember, tried to get Al-Qaeda leadership with, you know, strikes from offshore. And by securing the population, I think that's the key thing, because once the people there recognize that we're there, we're not going to leave, I think that they will side with us, and I think then you'll be able to get a lot of the warlord people who and tribal leaders are going to go with a winner, and it will also send a signal to the people in, you know, Pakistan that we're not, you know, going to, you know, take a risky strategy, and, you know, I think get them to do what they need to do.
Let me go to Lee calling from Brewster, Massachusetts. Lee, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom.
Hi.
My feeling is that we should get out quickly. War is permanent foreclosure on life, innocent life, liberty, and the U.S. economy. And instead of rationalizing this war, which will ultimately destabilize the U.S. to make money for the defense and oil industry, we should allocate the money to create a long overdue sustainable energy economy here.
Are you worried about a zone of instability in Afghanistan, Pakistan, that would come back to threaten?
No, I'm not. I think that the real question is cui bono, to whom the benefit. It's not really to our benefit, and it's not certainly not to the benefit of the Muslim world to continue to create chaos. So to whom the benefit?
And you see it just as a kind of a business benefit. Lee, thanks for calling. Not pretty pictures over the weekend of private contractors guarding U.S. Embassy and elsewhere, sort of, you know, stone drunk in jockstraps messing around in Kabul. That can't make us real popular up there, Stephen Walt.
Well, it also just conveys, again, the magnitude of the task. If we can't even keep our own contractors under control, the idea that we're going to be able to construct a workable, centralized Afghan government, I think, again, is a bridge way too far. Afghanistan has never had a strong central state. We thought Hamid Karzai was going to be a terrific leader when he first was put into power. It's turned out he's been much of a disappointment. If he weren't there, we have no idea who we would want to put in place afterwards. We talk now about trying to create Afghan security forces, but if you look at the size of those forces and what they would cost, the cost of those forces would exceed the central government budget of Afghanistan by, I think, sort of twice as much, which means, and this has been openly acknowledged, the international community would have to pay for those security forces for an indefinite future. There's finally lots of potential unintended consequences here. The deeper we go into Afghanistan, the more dependent we are on supply lines through Pakistan, which means we have less leverage with the Pakistani government. We potentially are more of a destabilizing influence there. The point is, the future of this region is ultimately going to be determined by the inhabitants of that region. We're going to be mindful of it. We'll have to watch it. But the idea that we're going to orchestrate how that area of 200 million Muslims, Pakistan and Afghanistan together, is going to evolve. Again, that's up to them, shouldn't be up to us.
Let's get a caller from Buffalo, New York. Robert, you're on the air.
Yes, how you doing?
Hi, Robert. We're doing well. What do you think?
We've been over there for a long time. And what I'm feeling is that, I mean, there's a lot of monies that been invested in this war, and there's a lot of lives that have been invested in this war, and what I'm feeling is that maybe it's time for us to move out.
Time to go. Robert, thanks for your call. Larry Korb, you know, the polls are showing a lot of Americans share that view at these days. I mean, are you worried that President Obama, if he's committed, is losing the public on this? You have been around long enough to remember what happened to LBJ in Vietnam. People are saying it could happen to Barack Obama.
Well, there's no doubt it could, unless he conveys to the American people how committed he is. And he's got to rally the support, because as several callers have pointed out, and Steve has, we've been there a long time, and people are saying, well, what's going on? Nobody paid attention, and that was part of the problem. I mean, the President Bush kept turning down requests from the commanders for more troops going back to 2005. You know, Admiral Mullen in 2007 said, well, in Iraq we do what we must, in Afghanistan we do what we can. That's the problem. We didn't do anything. Now all of a sudden, you know, Admiral Mullen and Secretary Gates have woken up to this. And I'm thinking, you guys have been there for a couple of years. What have you been doing? And that's the real question. Have it gone down so far that there's no hope? And I think in about a year, year and a half, you'll see if you can begin to turn it around. But I'm not underestimating the difficulties of ignoring it, for these past 8 years.
But doesn't more troops in itself as a move present its own risks? I mean, Robert Gates is on the record saying he's worried that just Afghans seeing more and more U.S. troops around, engenders its own resistance.
Well, it certainly does. But again, you know, Gates is always on both sides of every issue. I mean, he's saying that. And then, of course, once he recognized, you know, what McChrystal, the commander he put in there, was going to say, then he's changed his mind. Yes, it does. There's no doubt about it. But again, I think if you get the security situation under control, you begin to turn it around, that gives you the prospect of being able to stabilize the situation, because the people there, you know, it's interesting, the Taliban has very little support among the people, and I think we can regain the support we should have had, or we had when we first went in, if we do it correctly.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Afghanistan and President Obama's big looming decision. Go deep, pull back. What next in that very, very tough theater? We've heard from Kabul. We have Lawrence Korb and Stephen Walt with us. Right now from Washington, we're joined by U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, Democrat from Wisconsin, been a leading Democratic voice for bringing U.S. troops from Afghanistan back along what he calls a flexible timetable. Senator Feingold, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on the show.
Why are you arguing to find the road home from Afghanistan?
Well, showing people that there is a road home is important not only for the Afghan people and for the American people, but for the whole world. If the perception is that we are simply trying to stay in Afghanistan indefinitely, I think it hurts us in our efforts against the Taliban. It helps them recruit. It surely undercuts support back home, given the fact that we've had 45 Americans killed in July and over 50 in August. And in the world, it questions for people the idea that we really are there for a specific purpose. It begins to look like we're trying to control a region, which is the worst possible message we can send, not only to Afghanistan, but to Pakistan, India, Iran, and all the other countries in the region that are so critical for our national security.
So you've said we need to start discussing a flexible timetable to bring our brave troops out of Afghanistan. What would that mean, Senator Feingold?
Well, just as we did with Iraq in August of 2005, I said, look, it's time we start showing people how we would leave instead of looking like it's going to be an indefinite occupation. So I think a public conversation about what kind of a time frame we're thinking about using to stay there, what that time frame would mean, what our goals are during that period, so that people would have some concept of what we really intend to do. What it looks like we're doing right now to so many people in Afghanistan and throughout the world is we're just staying there. And it doesn't make a lot of sense to people, given the fact that the leaders of al-Qaeda that attacked us in 9/11 are well known to be in Pakistan and not in Afghanistan.
So are you proposing to get out, to go light, to continue to fight it with drones and commandos? What do you envision?
Well, I think this is the discussion we should have. I believe that there have been many successful operations, including the kind that took down al-Zarqawi in Iraq, operations that have been held in Southeast Asia and around the world. We work cooperatively with other governments who obviously don't like al-Qaeda either. We don't invade their countries and then go after al-Qaeda. We work with them to go after al-Qaeda. That's the way we should do it, instead of unlimited boots on the ground that I think actually produces the opposite result, the radicalization of a populace who is fearful that the Americans are there to stay. And if there's any place on earth where that's a bad idea, it's in Afghanistan. Ask the Russians, ask the British, what happens if you try to occupy Afghanistan?
President Obama has already bumped up the level by 21,000, and now with General McChrystal's recommendation, apparently very seriously considering a very significant further bump. You're saying your Democratic president is wrong. What do you think is wrong with his analysis?
Well, you know, I was very hesitant to start saying this because I think President Obama has a much better concept of what's going on in that region. He's taken the lead in talking about how Pakistan is so central to the issue. But the problem is that at the same time, I did not understand why he accepted the advice of military people to beef up our military presence in Afghanistan when the much greater problem is in Pakistan. In fact, I think, and it's been basically not denied, either the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Mullen, or Richard Holbrooke, our special envoy, they did not deny that this may push more radicals into Pakistan, which is actually a bigger deal. So when I heard about the 21,000, I was troubled. And I'm even more troubled now at the idea of a much bigger troop buildup. I think it's a mistake. I think the president needs to listen a little bit less to the people that are talking about the military side, listen more to people that are thinking about the whole region and the diplomatic side.
Do you fear that this could become Obama's Vietnam, a phrase people are using, endangering his domestic agenda, Senator?
There's always a risk of that. I'm not so focused on what it does to his domestic agenda, although that's something that's worth considering. I'm actually very concerned about what it does to our position in the world. The president is absolutely committed to our national security. He said our goal is to stop al-Qaeda. Everything we do should be consistent with that and certainly not a counter to that. And that's the problem. I think, and many experts agree with me, and many Americans now agree with me, I think most Americans agree with me now, that what we're doing in Afghanistan actually weakens our ability to stop the Taliban in Pakistan and to some extent in Afghanistan, and surely is not what is the most likely way to get at Osama bin Laden, Mullah Omar, and others who are still at large, and they're not in Afghanistan.
Barack Obama is not an unintelligent guy. He says it's a war of necessity.
He's a brilliant guy. But you know what? He and I and others have disagreed by very talented people about things like whether going into the Iraq war was a good idea. I didn't think it was a good idea. A lot of smart people thought it was a good idea. That's not how we do things in government. We have an intelligent discussion. We try to persuade each other. I'm trying to persuade the president who I think is a fine man and a very good leader, that this is not a good course. I'm trying to point out to him the problems with the course, and I assume he takes it in that spirit.
How do you read the wind on this, Senator? There seems to be a pretty big head of steam for more troops.
That is unfortunately where they're heading, but if you listen to what the American people say, I'm convinced, whether they're the most conservative people, the kind of people you've seen at these town meetings, or the most liberal people, people are turned off by this idea. They can tell it's not working. They see the increase in deaths of American troops, and they don't see real results for it. It is an unwise strategy that does not reflect the president's very words about the centrality of Pakistan versus Afghanistan.
Democratic U.S. Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin joining us today from Washington, D.C. Senator Feingold, thanks very much for being here.
It's great to be on. Thanks for
joining us. Lawrence Korb, there's the argument right from the heart of the Democratic Party against the buildup. What do you say to the senator's argument, Larry?
Well, basically, he's right. Its strategy up to now is not working. That, you know, the new troops are really not there and being employed. And I think that's the, you know, that's the key thing. I think that you now have a commander who's committed to a different strategy, and we'll find out if it can work. But I think Senator Feingold is absolutely correct. You're going to have to convince the Americans and the people in Afghanistan you're not there indefinitely, and he's going to have to persuade them that the United States, though, that this is not going to be quick and easy. I have no doubt that there are a lot of people in the Democratic Party and in the country, and even conservatives. We saw last week the big thing with George Will.
George Will saying time to find the way out.
Right, that's correct. So I think he's got a tough job. Now, I happen to think he, you know, by sending the 21,000 right away, that was to signify to the people in the region that we're not going to leave precipitously, and then take a look at what General McChrystal says and see if, you know, if you're willing to do that. And if you're not, then I think, you know, Steve and Senator Feingold are correct. Okay, if you're not willing to do it, let's, you know, get out before we do more damage.
Stephen Walt, why, if U.S. would find a way out, George Will, the conservative columnist, saying it's time to rapidly reverse the trajectory of America's involvement in Afghanistan. And he, like you, is saying, let's look at what can be done from offshore with intelligence and drones, cruise missiles, airstrikes, special forces. But is that enough to keep, I mean, already with all these troops there, NATO and U.S., the Taliban is in control of a huge portion of Afghanistan. Why wouldn't we see the Taliban parading into Kabul, that whole country back under their sway, maybe them influencing Pakistan toward the Islamists who already have a lot of sway in Pakistan? I mean, why wouldn't the whole thing just tumble down the hill with Pakistan's nukes and everything else in the deluge?
First of all, we have to recognize that what we call the Taliban is actually not a single unified monolithic organization, right? It's a lot of people who have very local concerns, who don't think in terms of global jihad, don't think in terms of, say, Osama bin Laden's agenda. And even within Afghanistan itself, it's to some degree a coalition.
Are you saying by that you wouldn't mind if the Taliban paraded into Kabul and took over? Is it okay?
I have no love for the Taliban.
No, but I mean, you're saying it wouldn't matter because they're a patchwork with different views?
My point is that you were suggesting that if we were not there, they would suddenly seize control in Kabul and then begin to sweep towards Islamabad, and suddenly you have a radicalized Central Asia. First of all, even within Afghanistan, it's a loose coalition. There are other warlords up in the north from different ethnic groups who are strongly opposed them, much more capable than they were in the 1990s when the Taliban were able to gain power in the whole of the country, partly by allying with other groups, which is, by the way, how Afghan politics has always worked. It's always been various coalitions, right? The idea that they will then sweep over and take over Pakistan, I think, is completely fanciful. The Pakistani army is disciplined, it's loyal, it is well-trained, it is well-armed. The Taliban are rather primitively armed. They have no capacity to sort of invade Pakistan and seize power there. So again, this is a
But they could give refuge to Islamists who are strong inside some sectors, even of the Pakistani power structure.
Again, they are in Pakistan, yes, but the idea that they could provide refuge in some way overthrow the Pakistani government, I think, is, again, far-fetched.
But it was only a couple of months ago that we were looking at Islamists in the Swat Valley, and everybody was talking about, 50 miles from Islamabad. And
right. These were, a few thousand lightly armed individuals mm-hmm. going up against the entire Pakistani army.
And
they were not going to get into Islamabad, which is why, of course, they rely on improvised explosive devices mm-hmm. and suicide bombers. You don't do that if you have a lot of military capability. You do that if the only thing you can pull off is suicide bombings and things like that. Again, we've, I think, allowed ourselves to be mesmerized by mm-hmm. two delusions. One is that American national security is vitally affected by the fate of Central Asia, mm-hmm. Which is not to say there aren't certain things to worry about there and to pay attention to, but not vitally affected. And secondly, we have to get out of the mindset that assumes that every social problem in the world has to have a solution based on American power and especially American military power. I thought Senator Feingold had it exactly right. We have to start making it clear to people that we're not trying to run those societies. We're not trying to reorganize those polities. We don't know how to do it. We are as likely to make things worse as to make things better. We can do certain things for these countries. We can have a small training mission. We can do infrastructure development. We know how to build roads and bridges. We know how to build electrical grids. Mm-hmm. We can do that in the northern part of Afghanistan where it's relatively quiet. And then we can focus our intelligence assets and special forces to go after the enemies of the United States, namely al-Qaeda, wherever it is, which is not just Pakistan, not just Afghanistan, but also a number of other places. But we shouldn't be occupying these countries and trying to remake them in our image.
We're looking at Afghanistan and the big decision that Barack Obama is going to be facing this fall on whether or not to go in even heavier there or, as we heard Senator Russ Feingold say, begin to find the road home. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's get a call from Detroit, Michigan, and Carlos. Carlos, you're on the air.
Hey, it's good to hear from you. I'm a very avid listener to your show. Here's my observations from other guests from other shows. I think one gentleman, Juan Cole, I believe he's from University of Michigan.
Yes.
He has got some pretty good insights. And also, there's other things I've heard from other authors. But here, let me cut to the chase. I think your guest there mentioned some very good points. The Afghans are simple things like school buildings, well buildings, that way they can get their water and so forth, so on. Now, what works in Afghanistan is the form of government put by districts. I think it's more like run by their tribal leaders. And that's what works well for them and will continue to work for them for many generations to come until eventually they create a much more, how would you say, modern state.
So, Carlos, should it be U.S. soldiers in there building schools and bridges and, you know, running after the Taliban or somebody else?
Okay. Now, that would help big time because the United States Army Special Forces in the past have done that in Vietnam with success, winning the hearts and minds. So they
yes and no. We lost Vietnam.
Okay. Right? That is understood. But this country in particular wants to run its own destiny. I'm pretty sure they would like help where it's needed. And I think what could best be helped is let them run their own government, again, by district, by tribal leaders.
More troops or not, Carlos? If you're the president, do you send in another 30,000 or not?
I would not suggest sending any more troops. I would say work well with the people over there. They want to run their own destiny. They want to have district type of government by tribal leaders.
Now, Carlos, we've got it, and I appreciate your call very much from Detroit. Thanks for being there. Lawrence Korb, is there another way here? What about drones and special forces and maybe, you know, aid that puts in bridges and wells and schools? Could we not do it that way, Larry?
I don't think unless you get the situation on the ground under control, you're going to be able to do this development. And that's been part of the problem because we started, a reconstruction, and then, of course, the security situation deteriorated. President Bush did not follow up on all of the aid and the reconstruction that he promised. And so I think you've got to get the security situation under control on the ground, then you can do those things. If you just have drones and special forces, you're not going to be able to do that. I do think Steve is right. The Taliban is not, unified, and you can break off parts of it basically when they're convinced that you're going to win. And I mean, and we've made mistakes. I mean, the former Taliban foreign minister came in 2005 and, say, hey, I want to work with the Americans. We put him in jail. And, you know, we did that to a couple others. So we've made an awful lot of mistakes up to now. I do think if we put in these troops in a, you know, year, year and a half, you'll see the security situation improving. And if you do, then you can begin to do these other things. But there's no guarantee on this. And it may be we're going to have to make a judgment that it's deteriorated so much that we're going to have to adopt a different strategy.
Stephen Walt, give us a little political analysis here. How do you interpret the president here, Barack Obama, during the campaign? He drew a distinction between himself and John McCain by saying Iraq was wrong, Afghanistan is right. That established his national security credentials in those debates, maybe cynics would say. Is he stuck on that now? Did he use Afghanistan to prove that he was a tough guy and now he's got to go the distance, even put in more? Or does he have real – how do you interpret what he's done, doing?
No, I think there's a lot of truth in that, that certainly during the campaign, this was the way that he sort of showed his cojones on national security and was able to distance himself from McCain. But departing from a campaign promise is a time-honored American political tradition, and it seems to me he had the opportunity early on to say, I've talked to my advisors, I've looked at this one carefully, it's clear that we have certain interests there, but I think we need to go a different way. Now, he didn't do that, in part because many of the people he was listening to, I think, were very much sort of a can-do mentality, that if we just devote the right resources to this, just put enough troops, enough money, we can turn this one around. He was persuaded by that and committed himself. Now, the problem, as many other presidents have learned, is it's much easier to go in. It's much easier to escalate than it is to get out. Once you've gone in, people will say you've committed your prestige. Now we can't afford to lose because we've made it so important by putting, you know, it's such a test case of our capacity. It seems to me he does have one more shot here to say, you know, I've really looked carefully at this one, and I think we need to rethink what we're doing and go in another direction. If he doesn't do that, he's going to be stuck with it for the rest of his term, first term, if not beyond, and I fear it's not going to be a success.
Well, this is not the end of this debate. Even George Will on the right now saying, let's reverse the trajectory. Stephen Walt with Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, Lawrence Korb at the Center for American Progress. Thanks to you both for being with us this hour. This is On Point.